Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and Paradigm Shifters, from my perspective, are people who are making a difference in the collective of our species around this planet. I have a wonderful Paradigm Shifter with me tonight, Chris Griscom, who, in her wisdom and, I guess, multidimensional insight, started the Light Institute and the Nijoni School, and has authored, 14 books and travels the world over, prying us loose from some of the tenets of our consciousness. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Veronica. It's a great pleasure to be with you all.
Good. We're very, very pleased and honored to have you. Now, I think I'll start with the beginning, which is, how did you get started with this? Were you raised in a consciousness world?
No, but I was given the freedom to imagine, to connect with beings from other worlds. I spent a lot of time alone in nature, and so I was allowed to explore that, really. My parents thought I was a little strange. I think many people have these experiences, you know, that somehow a rock speaks to you, or you feel a connection to a bird, or something, and it triggers an expansion in your consciousness. And so when I was very young, I had a lot of those kinds of experiences. That I had several death experiences. At one time, for exactly a year, I was traveling in and out of my body.
Were you a child?
That wasn't so fun for me.
No. Were you a small person then?
A small person, yes.
So,
a small person. That's from the moment of conception.
So then, from that, when did you start the Light Institute, and what prompted that? You were in Peace Corps, weren't you?
Yes, I was. And I think I'd have to say that, you know, in terms of a expansion of consciousness, life, death, divine source, humanity, that really was stimulated in me in the Peace Corps. I was around shamans and healers and people who believed in many dimensions, and I worked in those fields, and so I wrote a book called Time is an Illusion. It actually came out in German first. And from that,
why was your Peace Corps in Germany? No, it was in South America.
No, you know, it was a funny thing. Someone had mentioned me, I'll just say Shirley MacLaine had mentioned me in a book that she wrote, Dancing into the Light, and she wrote about my work, and so suddenly I was flooded with people, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, you know, this isn't about me. Everyone thought if they could just get to me and get the gold needles, they would catch their higher selves and expand their consciousness. And my message, Veronica, is that each one of us has that wisdom inside us, and all we need is to tune into that and be aware of it. So often, we have a sense, as you were talking about being an intuitive, you know. Mm-hmm. We have an intuition. It's part of the human brain genetics. But we don't recognize it. Now, when somebody calls on the phone, often you'll say, oh, that's so-and-so. You know who it is because you know the feeling of them. Mm-hmm. And if you stop and say, thank you, to your brain, to the mind of the cell, it would continue to do that more and more and more.
Well, let's jump back to being in the Peace Corps and surrounded by shamans, which is a very enviable place to be. And from there, we went into already being in the Light Institute and Golden Needles. I don't want to miss where all of that happened.
Well, all right. After the Peace Corps, I came back and I went to visit the Edgar Cayce Foundation in Arizona. They have once a year a wonderful symposium that they've had for 50 years, where the best and the brightest of doctors, of physicists, of mostly healers in the healing world, but people who are interested in consciousness and wielding it, you know. And I visited with somebody who was there who said, oh, for heaven's sake, go get a license of any kind so you can do your work.
At this point, you had been not validating or validating your intuition?
Oh, I had always validated my intuition. It's a place where I always had courage. Mm. You know, I always said, this is what I think, you know, or this is what I get. And I always felt that. And I definitely feel it's so important for everyone to begin on the tiniest levels. That's what I meant about the phone call, you know, to say thank you, to acknowledge it.
Mm.
You know, often people say, I had a sense that would happen, or I knew that would happen.
Yeah, I knew and I didn't pay attention. I knew and I didn't pay attention is one of the common complaints as well.
Yeah. I didn't pay attention, or I didn't want to say it in case I was wrong.
Right.
And I learned long ago teaching children that, you know, you never focus on whether you're right or wrong, because as the Chinese would say, everything is connected to everything. And that's what Einstein was talking about in relativity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, I'm looking at a person I've never seen before and I think they have a heart problem, but really it's a kidney problem,
mm-hmm.
Well, the kidney's connected to the heart. So eventually you'll come around to it. You may only see the front side instead of the hologram.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you went off and got some certification. Did you do body work or what?
Yes, I did. I started.
Or did you start
body
your
work
center?
It was one of those magical things where I no sooner got my license as a massage therapist that I began teaching massage, and I chose to teach esoteric massage, you know.
Which is energy as well?
Which is using that, intuitive sense of the body, letting the body talk to you, and understanding the meridians and the currents of energy, and working with someone that way, and including them in it. You know, all of us love to have somebody else do it for us, whether it's tell us what's going to happen or whatever, you know. We trust others more than we trust ourselves.
Would you agree that the body is kind of a library of things that have happened before, whether it's past lives or other people's
influences? Of course. You know, our work at the Institute, at the Light Institute, is all about, we wouldn't call them past lives. We would call them incarnations of the soul.
Okay.
Because and they're not past. The scenario is past. Roman, Egyptian, you know, wherever that was, that's past. But the theme of the lifetime is still coming through you. And so we repeat and we repeat, because so often our earthly experiences are attached psychogenetically to our emotional DNA. So we come into a body and we choose our parents and we just continue themes, whether it was power or sickness, or helplessness, or whatever it was in some lifetime, we repeat it, and we repeat it with the same people. We just play different roles. And so
one of your jobs at the Light Institute is to unhook people from that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, the way that we unhook them is we don't just go, okay, here's your theme, you feel powerless, let's go into the lifetimes in which you were powerless.
Mm-hmm.
But also, let's go into the lifetimes in which you were powerful. Let's look at your misuse of power, and let's look at imprints that you have of using it well.
Mm-hmm.
So that as you dissolve, because it's not enough to look at a lifetime, you have to get rid of it on a cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the very important message of the Light Institute.
And how do you get rid of it? Is it through energy work? Is it through simply knowing about it?
What no,
it?
Knowing about it is never the thing.
Or the golden needle?
I don't need the golden needles anymore. That was for me. That was a memory that I had, really, that had to do with an ancient China, the windows to the sky.
Mm.
Once I remembered the windows to the sky, I was able to apply the technology of ancient Chinese.
Hmm.
But the way we get rid of it is simply by allowing people to use light, because every cell in our body is reproduced through light, ultraviolet light through the RNA. That's how we reproduce cells. So we use color. We use frequencies of light, which the person creates inside them, to erase a memory or to amplify something or to move it. And that is very effective, because the endocrine system, which fires our energy, our hormones, our life force, is the threshold between the physical body and the light body.
Hmm.
So everyone in every culture is very sensitive to light.
But you're saying that we create it inside. I have heard that blind people have a lot of light going on inside
Yes. You know, I worked with blind people in Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
One of the times, I was there for 4 years in two separate occasions. And I worked with blind people, and I would come in, and I could be maybe 30, 40 feet away from them, and someone would call out, "Oh, I just love it when you wear that blue silk dress." I go, "Wait a minute, wait a minute. You said you were blind." And they could feel the texture, so they knew it was silk, not cotton, not wool, mm-hmm. and they could feel the color of it.
And that's by being astute about or accepting and recognizing energy, would you say that?
I would. Mm-hmm. What I would say is, and this is true of us all, and if we could understand this from a profound spiritual level, we'd be a lot happier. If something is removed from you, quote unquote, mm-hmm. you always have the power to adapt a higher, more amplified version of it. Just like getting new, I just got a new computer yesterday, you know, version of whatever senses. Now, at Nijoni and the Light Institute, we say we have 70 senses, not just 5 or 6 if we're like you, mm-hmm. And me, but 70. So sense of success is a real sense. And certainly sense, color is a sense, you know, texture is a sense. Hmm. And so they would be able to tell me. And they said that they could see through their skin.
Hmm.
And that's why blind people touch you all the time, you know. Hmm. But they could do it from a distance.
Hmm.
So I learned a lot about them. And not only that, of course, they knew exactly what mood I was in, and what I was going to talk about, and what we were going to do.
So it was a real learning curve for you as well, to trust
was,
and open.
You know, Jackson Brown, if you're as old as I am.
I am, actually.
All
just,
right.
Just
so then
a
you
little
know
bit.
Of Jackson Brown. He had a song, and he said, "Just do the dance that you've been shown by everyone you've ever known." And I would say that, yes, I learned from true shamans and curanderos when I was very young. But the best things that I ever learned were from, and I still do, from everyone I meet.
Isn't that wonderful? What a wonderful gift. So you started the Light Institute, and you also started a school for children, because a lot of us talk about, wouldn't it be wonderful to raise the children to
yes.
be so astute at that? Have you had that kind of success at Nijoni?
Yes, of course. And, you know, the thing is, though, we didn't just do the school. It was called the Nijoni School for Global Consciousness.
Okay.
And our students, we actually, up until a few years ago, we actually gave a master's degree in divinity.
Oh, wow.
So most of our students were actually in their 20s and 30s and 40s.
Hmm.
But we did have from before kindergarten, preschool, all the way up to high school, college, and graduate.
So what have been the I'm absolutely fascinated by, for example, somebody starts at kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
What are the results? Are they kind of
I think they're just spectacular. And I have a second generation Nijoni in Germany right now who is doing a version of Nijoni. So I'm very proud of that.
Hmm.
And what I would say is that little children are always moving in and out of their bodies. They're always using their intuition, their right brain, their alpha levels of consciousness. And so when you support that and you say, "Oh, yes, this is what that is," then they not only develop those skills, but they don't lose them. Typically, at about 7, I would say 6 these days because kids go to school earlier, children lose those capacities of precognition. You know, children are always saying, "Oh, so-and-so is going to die," or, you know, they're always saying things that disturb their parents because they can see those things. They can see auras. They see energies, the life force energy. They see when people are sick or angry. They pick that up in the womb. Before you're born, you can already tell, you know, who's in what mood.
Yeah, I can remember knowing I had never been born and I'd never died.
Isn't that fantastic?
But I lost that, I think, around 7.
Mm-hmm. That's when we say that the psychic doors close.
Hmm.
The psychic doors close, and because when we go to school, we have to pay attention. We have to sit in a chair. So I've never been a proponent of locking children in.
So let's go back to kids coming to school. Do they, if they, let me see, do you have any examples of children that started very young? Do they stay open? Have they got a multidimensionality by the time they're?
You know, it's one of those things. It's a way of living.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of 1,000 different experiences. I get letters all the time from people who say, "This was the greatest experience of my life when I was 5.
Oh.
I say, "Come on, come on, you're living now." You know, but I think most of that, what I would say about that, because I want this conversation that we're having to be something that adults can really relate to,
mm-hmm.
that what happens is that when you're given permission to be your true self, You are adventuresome, you're courageous, you're creative. And so what I would say, which is true of Peace Corps people too, is that people who went through Nijoni or have these kinds of perspectives that, in which other people have said to you, that's right, now do it again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can you see what this person is doing? For example, when I would take my children around the world, we would sit at airports and I would say, now look out and pick somebody and tell me what you think they're thinking or feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And now send color to them and see what happens. And we'd be sitting there doing these exercises and people would just start, you know, walking back and forth in front of us and sitting down around us. And, you know, and the children could see that they were attracting them.
And you raised 6 children in this style?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
And did it work with all of them or did anyone turn in the other direction?
I would I would say that there is no such thing as the other direction, really.
Okay.
Because in the end, we're all balancing karma. Mm-hmm. We're all experiencing. And one of the big teachings, my last book was called The Evolution of God.
Yes, I want to talk about that.
Yes, what I was talking about in that was that God grows through us, or the divine source is what I would call God, grows through us. In other words, every experience we have, it amplifies the cosmos, the unmanifest. And so there is no backwards and forwards if you look at it holographically in a big arena. So all of my children, three of my children actually did the work that I do in one form or another.
Hmm.
And the other three, I'm trying to count them all, the other three went to my school, one of them all the way through, and that one, Bapu Griscom, he's working in film now. And yes, at the moment, he's very into television's reality shows and stuff, but he's so astute about the emotional body that I think it supports his life a lot.
Well, that's wonderful news. And also, the emotional body, I want to talk about, well, maybe we should go into that. If people realize, I think most people listening to this show realize that we have a mental, physical, emotional, spiritual body, right?
That's right. I think that's common.
Yeah.
Everyone is comfortable with that. But
if you come in, say you're born with, pick something, sadness, low self-esteem, strong victim or something like that. People can be born with that, right?
Oh, yes.
So is that in the emotional body?
Yes. It's in what I call the emotional DNA. And I'm very excited because I feel that science is on the verge of being able to classify what I've been talking about for 40 years, which is emotional DNA, which means that there is a matrix. There is a, I wouldn't say necessarily predetermined by something outside you, but predetermined by your own soul, patterning that you have, emotional patternings or reference points that determine choices that you make. We have free choice. We always have. We always will.
Mm-hmm.
Not because someone gave it to us, but because it's part of our genetic encoding. But let's say in a multi-incarnational framework that in your last night, last lifetime, you did something that you feel very guilty about.
Mm-hmm.
You would bring that guilt in. And then because it's not a concept, guilt, emotions are just the outside of the emotional body. The emotional body functions by association and conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we hang on so much emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a lifetime or a parent, let's say, that represents or has imprinted you with low self-esteem through guilt, through punishment, through any of those things, your emotional body, which doesn't have time and space, it's in the astral, it will keep seeking it. Now, what we do know scientifically, just like drug addictions, is that when you have a moment of anxiety or fear, it creates a biochemical stimulus in your body,
right,
and you become addicted to it. That's why we love horror movies and terrible news on the newspaper, because you get a little rush. You physically get a little rush when you're frightened or when you're excited, and people get adjusted to that patterning, and they repeat it.
So now I want to jump into something. You've said you've used two terms. One of them is being in your true self, Mm-hmm. Right? And when I think about that, I think, isn't it, when your emotional body is running certain programs, mm-hmm. the other thing you said was we always have the ability to make a choice in every moment. But mm-hmm. I'm going, when the programs are being run intensely, mm-hmm. It's like we don't really have our real self present in a okay. way.
Well, we don't know who we are. We don't have a recognition that we have the power to change it.
That's
and that's
right.
what's going on the planet, whether you're talking about politics or economics or relationships or, above all, on the simplest terms, our physical bodies right now. Mm-hmm. And these are the lessons that we're learning collectively. We do not realize that we can actually stop a disease, that we can change our body, because we have so much information and vibrations through us and around us that are available to us that can change what we manifest. And it's time for us to learn that, and that's why you have this program and why I'm speaking on it. Because I want to support, you and I want to support people in seeking that and finding it inside themselves and beginning to say, I can change this.
Yes, I want to. But, you know, the thing is, okay, how do we, I'm going to be very mechanistic
That's
here. How do we go into our emotional DNA mm-hmm. and unhook something that
Great.
Is limiting our consciousness?
I love that you state that because it's something I can pass to your people who are listening right now so
They'll
quickly
love it.
And so
They'll appreciate
easily.
You. Mm-hmm.
And that's by using the frequency of light. Remember that our emotions are not concepts. They are actual feelings. They are actual currents of energy. So, for example, if you're feeling hopeless today, mm-hmm. all you have to do is stop and say, where am I feeling this hopelessness in my body? Or fear or anger or whatever it is, this emotion, mm-hmm. which is emoting from the emotional body. Where is that in my body? Because you are not your emotional body. It's stuck in you, and it's activated because of some association that you have or some conclusion that you have.
So it's like a magnetic activation force when you run into somebody with a similar...
Oh, yes. Yeah. You pull it right in from someone right through your belly button the same way you did while you were in the womb.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's why we have these negative patterns. And that we and this is the difficulty for many intuitive people is that they suck in from their emotional body, which is in the solar plexus or the stomach. And they pull in because right there is your umbilical area. So you pull in the same way that you did when you were in the womb. Hmm. And then you can feel what someone's feeling, but your body has to pay the consequences. But so we have what we call exercises in consciousness.
Okay.
And this is one of them. Where am I holding that helplessness at this moment? And then just feel as if, imagine what your body is telling you. You might see a place in your body or hear it or feel it. All right, I feel it, this hopelessness in my stomach right now. I can feel me squeezing. I'm hopeless. I can't do it. Okay, so then you bring your conscious awareness into your stomach. And you can actually look and see what that awareness looks like, but a quicker way to do it is to simply say, well, what frequency of light, what color does this area need to free me from that hopelessness? And then let's say it's orange, which is expansive. And so then just imagine that you're sucking it in. It could be like somebody's pouring liquid orange light or a stream of orange coming into you or orange fog. It doesn't make any difference, but orange coming into that area. And after a few seconds, and just let the orange come in and command it to dissolve the helplessness.
Hmm.
And you'll notice that within a very few seconds, it will go away.
And the color you choose is going to pop in. It's going to be, you're going to
Yes,
become
you
aware.
Don't choose it. You always let your body choose it because you
okay.
can't see the hologram, which simply means you can't see all the layers mm-hmm. of what's connected to that hopelessness. It might not even be yours.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest teachings that I was ever given by my own higher self, which is my intuitive voice, my inner voice, mm-hmm. is that whenever you feel something, immediately, whether it's you have a cold or you have a stomach ache or a headache or whatever it is, stop, or you feel angry, stop and ask, is this mine?
Okay.
Because so often, this is what I learned teaching children. So often, in fact, this is why my higher self insisted that I start a school. I didn't want to start a school because I had six children.
What did you do with your spare time, right?
Yeah, exactly. And this is why, because so often what we think is our reality, our choices, our opinions have nothing to do with us at all. They're not ours. And that's why we so often feel helpless, because we don't know who we don't know what's ours.
Yeah, that's why that whole thing about being your true self always perplexes me, because I think that's pretty hard in this stew that we live in.
Well, actually it's not, but the cosmic giggle of that, Veronica, mm-hmm. is that your true self is changing every second.
Oh my, that's kind of neat.
A couple of years ago, my higher self said, stop talking about your true self, because you're changing with every experience you have, every moment that you look out of your body and your 70 senses are incorporating and putting in boxes and aligning and rationalizing all the things that you're doing with all the information that you're getting, like a computer, you're changing, because you're changing through the experiences. That's why incarnating in our body is so expensive and necessary.
So actually, that's the foundation of the evolution of God these days,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, so, it is. Yeah. That the true purpose of life mm-hmm. is the evolution of the soul. And that evolution goes on when we're making love, when we're making money, when we're thinking something, when you're driving down the road, whatever is occurring, that evolution, which is simply the progression from one point to another. But I want to go back to this exercise in consciousness, because I wanted to point out another part of it.
Please.
So you can do it by the negative. What is bothering me right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I feel I can't do it financially, or maybe I feel I'm powerless, or I feel sick to my stomach, or whatever it
is.
Or
I'm in a job I can't stand.
Yeah. And I'd like to comment on that, but let me finish this.
Okay.
So you could go through the negative. What color does it need to come into balance in my life and be released if it were like a job? You know, or bring that color in and let the color wash it away. Because you don't have to be stuck with it. You don't have to carry it around. We do not have to carry memories.
Oh, we don't?
No, we do not.
Delightful.
In fact, they don't service. They service only as a point of reference, but that point of reference too often we can carry through the rest of our lives and limit ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the other way of doing that exercise in consciousness is by looking at its, quote, opposite. Now, I don't really think that things are in polarity. That's an illusion that we have, and we need to, as we advance, as we evolve, we'll get rid of the illusion of polarity. But you could say, let's see if I feel helpless. Where am I holding my center or my sense of power or my sense of creativity? So you could just turn it around to its higher octave. And then, where is that in my body? Focus on that point. And then take a deep breath and let that energy burst out of that place.
As soon as you said that, my whole heart chakra opened and I felt like laughing my head off.
Great. Laughter's the greatest healing.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
Oh, I love that. Exactly. And when you laugh, in the same way that when a butterfly moves its wings, it can cause, you know, floods. It can cause such a ripple in the direction of energy and the energies on the planet. We know that in science. So imagine when you laugh, that ripple goes out and it lifts everyone up.
Mm-hmm.
See, we don't realize, we feel separate and alone, and we don't realize that a smile or a giggle or touching someone or looking someone in the eye can change their lives.
Mm.
So we can do that exercise in that way. And
well,
what
about with addictions? Would that work with that as well?
Yes. I think it's wonderful. You know, I've worked with a lot of people with addictions. Now, of course, I would say that addictions have to be treated holographically, which means you cannot just treat them medically. You can't just give somebody an antidepressant, you know, or whatever it is, or something that's going to take them out of a drug addiction. You have to treat them nutritionally. You have to treat them emotionally. And I don't mean just psychologically. I mean emotionally in terms of, and this is how I got into the work, Veronica, really, is that in the Peace Corps, I worked in that psychological or emotional arena, supporting, facilitating other volunteers, and then at one point I was staff, etc. And what I saw was that the emotional body cannot shift itself, really. It can only be shifted through the spiritual body, the spiritual DNA. And that's what says you belong to the universe. You're fine. You do have power. It's not over anybody, but it's a sense of belonging. Mm. And the way that we get that is we go inside. We can't get it from the outside. You know, we have to get it from the inside. And the way that we do that is we begin to listen to what we think is true. In the same way, when you start talking about how you feel, it changes how you feel. Mm-hmm. It won't change the essence of it. You can't talk away the core of your anger. You can talk away the feeling of it, which is only the outside of the emotional body, and you can talk away that anger in such a way that you learn how to stuff it.
Mm.
But if you want to get rid of it, mm-hmm. you have to go to the source, and that's why I do incarnational work. Mm-hmm. Is that we
can, so the source can be other lives.
It always is.
And other imprints.
Oh, it always is. It mm-hmm. always is psychogenetic imprinting mm-hmm. that can come. One person could look at that in terms of you actually inherited your anger from your great-great-grandfather,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have inherited it because you're still holding a point that says, I'm the victim.
Mm-hmm.
From another lifetime or another 10 lifetime experiences that were so painful to you mm-hmm. that resulted in such a terrible death, let's say, for example, mm-hmm. that you're still carrying them.
Well, so now, is this in the spiritual DNA, as you call it?
It's in the emotional DNA, but in the spiritual. It would be in all of your DNA.
Hmm.
Because it would be spiritual in that which separates you. One of my first books is called The Healing of Emotion. And that book is about the separation trauma,
mm-hmm.
that when we forget that we're part of the cosmos, that we're divine in source, we feel small, we feel helpless, we feel anger to be separated in the same way that...
Is that where that deep loneliness comes?
That deep loneliness. Mm-hmm. We know we're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes we think it's a partner, because in Atlantis, we separated the male from the female. And so as soon as we did that, we knew for sure we were missing something.
Mm-hmm.
There was something that we had a point of reference to, but we couldn't figure out what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So we projected it outside us, and that projecting outside us has caused us eons of trouble.
Hmm.
So we have forgotten spiritual DNA. We have forgotten what spiritual essence is. We couch it in religion. It has nothing to do with religion. And so we have to be able to find that. Once a person... Now, for example, somebody gave me a call yesterday and said there was a 12-year-old boy and he's having visions. They put him in an institution.
Oh, my goodness.
Because he's having visions of seeing people. He looks out at people and he sees people with either people that he's actually seeing or in front of his mind's eye. He sees people who are hanging. And so somebody tried to clear the spirits from him. And I said, this has nothing to do with negative spirits around him. This is a lifetime imprint.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come into this lifetime still repeating it. Now, he might have been the one hanging them. And it's still entrapping him.
Does it matter? Do you have to know if you were the one or if you...
Oh, it's very important to know.
Okay.
And in fact, at the Light Institute, though we work a lot in terms of lifting someone up to give them the sense that they... have the creativity and the intelligence to risk bringing something new in. That, again, is our purpose,
mm-hmm.
to evolve, which is something
so,
new.
So if we're working with addictions, it would be like that, where you do the...
Yes, and it's very successful,
mm-hmm.
but a person must be fed. You have to feed their brain.
Okay.
Because when we have addiction, what does it mean? It means that there's a groove going on in the brain.
Right.
And it's a physiological groove, and it's not their fault. It's not a weakness. It's simply a physiological groove, and it has a repertoire. For example, if I were doing a consultation with someone, I wouldn't be taking them into another lifetime, but I would use only this lifetime, because when we go into incarnations of the soul, we do it very seriously, and it takes 4 days, 3 hours a day. But if I were doing an hour consultation, what I would do is ask your body to take you into the moment this addiction started. It's so amazing, Veronica. Mm-hmm. It may have started when the 2-year-old was watching their father smoke.
Mm-hmm.
The addiction might be cocaine, but the imprint of seeing that the father was putting out through his auric field a vibration, I've got to smoke, I've got to smoke, I've got to smoke, was passed psychogenetically to the child at that point.
But you can work with that just in this lifetime. You don't have to do all the past lives to get it.
You don't have to. If I were working with somebody with addictions, I would want them to do incarnations.
Right.
To look at the patterning, mm-hmm. you know, the susceptibility. It could have to do with things that you wouldn't imagine.
So
it could have to do with sense of self, of being loved, of a lifetime of starving,
mm-hmm.
A lifetime of being mentally ill. It could have to do with a thousand things, of dying by hitting your head. A thousand different things could be the source of an addiction.
Mm.
So even in this lifetime, you know, if you go back to the source of it, or you go back to memories when it was pulling on you and you release them, that's going to support the person. But I would always say, let's look at it and let's work with it holographically. So that person has to feed the brain.
Mm-hmm.
For example, with blue-green algae or any kinds of algae, anything that nourishes the brain patternings,
mm-hmm.
or the neurons all of that whole nervous system of the body needs to be fed,
mm-hmm.
with polysaccharides and all of those kinds of things that people would give you if you had MS.
Mm-hmm.
But lo and behold, your memory starts to improve, and suddenly your brain functions because you start healing the groove.
And you could use amino acids and that sort of thing.
All
as
of
well.
Those amino acids are, of course, fantastic. That's why I like blue-green algae.
Great.
Because that's all they are. That's all they are. You don't have to digest them.
Right. Okay, so I'm so worried that I'm going to lose you before I get every single question out. But as far as mothers and fathers and children and family and imprints and all of
yes.
that goes, I know you do an awful lot of work with that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Can you help people resolve some of their
yes. You
issues?
Know, in our work, we say that the outside of your own higher self, again, the intuitive essence of your soul and your own body, the most important relationships you have are with your parents.
Hmm.
And we choose on a spiritual level, we actually look down, and this is fascinating in my work, whether I'm working with, we start at 4 years old clearing the parents, or I'm working with a 60-year-old.
Hmm.
If we're clearing the parents, we start by going back to the moment before conception, looking down to see why you chose those parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because people often say, and in fact, if they're looking at being a killer or some negative experience, if you go back into their childhood, you'll see that they never were taught, in the same way you and I were talking initially about being taught to be intuitive,
mm-hmm.
or that you have this capacity. They were never taught to love. They were never taught to care. They were only taught to survive, you know. And so I feel that clearing what I call clearing the parents, and I've cleared my parents 23 times, and I had an idyllic childhood.
Oh, wow.
But every time I train, I clear my parents. So I see them from a spiritual perspective. Well, imagine having a father that abused you, for example,
mm-hmm.
or a mother who didn't want you,
mm-hmm.
and going back and looking at lifetimes you've experienced with him. Or if you were working, for example, just with me for an hour, we would go back and say, now ask your body to take you back to a moment when you felt your mother's love.
Mm.
And sometimes people will say, well, I never felt my mother's love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't want me. She never did. And I said, you couldn't be there unless there was some energy of love, because that's the way that the body protects new generations. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's a primordial energy.
Hmm.
Go back to a moment. It might have only been a flicker when for that moment she held you, or she approved of you, or she was proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
And when a person who has spent their whole life building up a point of reality saying, my mother didn't want me, so therefore I'm not worthy
mm-hmm.
of anything,
mm-hmm.
suddenly they go back to a memory in any experience when their mother was giving them love. It changes their lives right then and there.
Hmm.
Don't have to talk about it, you know.
Oh, that's
you just
great.
Have to let that feed yourself, and the person has changed.
Well, so what if you're looking at a person who's, say, four, five, or six or something, and mm-hmm. you see that he, she is being traumatized,
mm-hmm.
how can you help unhook them so that they don't have to grow up into that? And
you know,
then
that's so wonderful, because I've worked with children that are, you know, given to the courts, you know,
right.
taken away
oh
from their
my.
Parents. And
you've worked with them, hey?
Yes, I have.
Good for you.
And it's fascinating, because, you know, if you ask them, they'll go right back to their parents, even knowing they're going to be beaten.
Mm-hmm.
Even knowing they're going to go into this terrible experience, they will choose their parents over some stranger. Why? Because there is a spiritual connection there. So, and the other thing that I noticed with them is I'd be in talking to the judge and the, you know, the mothers and the fathers and all that stuff, the adult conversation. The kid is outside drawing on the sand, you know, or drawing on a piece of paper or touching the wall, or the kid will suddenly let go and become involved in the presence. What's the texture of that wall? And they're imagining. So it's very easy to work with children so that they are not carrying an imprint that destroys their life. So, for example, clearing the parents is very powerful for a child to see that, you know, if a child beats them, it's not about them.
Hmm.
It's not about them. It's about that their parent was beaten by their parents.
Mm-hmm.
But the parent has no self-esteem, so it's not about them at all.
So you think if you deal with the child when he's young and give him some consciousness, he can live in their environment and not become totally...
Yes, and guess how I do it, which is the most wonderful thing of all. Hmm. Not just, you're okay, it's not about you. I never spend much time talking. I always go right into exercises and consciousness. But, for example, you look up and you see that your father is very disturbed at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, what color does your father need from you? And you can start at about 3 years of age.
Hmm.
What color does your daddy need from you at this moment so he'll be calm and be okay? So I teach them to heal their parents.
Oh, wow, that's
and
great.
And when a child learns how to draw that color in from the cosmos to the top of their head
mm-hmm.
and out to their stomach and send it like a beautiful ray of light, and of course they can actually see that,
mm-hmm.
send that color to their father. And then the most wonderful thing is that the father will often calm down.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Even if the father's yelling at them.
That's a brilliant exercise.
Yes.
Oh, my.
To suddenly say, oh, let me help you.
Hmm.
And they send color to the father. The father will feel that love and feel that light, and suddenly he'll shake his head and go off or change the subject. And that's the thing I get the letters about the most.
Oh, wow, that's wonderful.
People, you know, they could be 50 and send light to their parent, and then suddenly the parent calls them, and they'll say, well, you know, I was sending light to my mother, and she hasn't called me in 5 years, and she called me.
And I don't care how old we get, that's a wonderful, wonderful feeling, isn't it?
Oh, it's a great feeling for them, you know. And when you raise children who start out at a very young age, whether they're in a terrible experience or they're just in a home, and knowing what to do when they're aware that their mama's depressed today, for example, and they have something to do, it creates a sense of identity, of having a place of belonging, of power, and they grow up in a different way.
Well, it sure beats worrying about them.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
I want to go back.
Worrying is a very useless energy. Because on a spiritual level, you don't know what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
The child as a fully developed soul, because as I always say, at the moment of conception, you're dealing with a fully developed soul who's chosen to come into this lifetime, feels that what they need is to let that person that they abused in some other lifetime abuse them. It's not black or white, but there is a story. There's a connection there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they choose that. They attract it to them. And so, you know, worrying about them doesn't help. Illuminating them helps.
Mm-hmm. And do they accept other lives really quickly?
Oh, yes. I work with scientists all the time. People
do you?
Who, you know, would want to have proof. Of course, I never bother with that conversation anymore. What I always say to them is, you are a very creative genius. Now, let's open up that genius capacity. And the way we're going to do it is by expanding your sense of self. So if a man has a lifetime as a woman, it enriches him.
Hmm.
So we don't care if it's true or not. We don't know. Science does not understand imagination.
So it's actually, he would actually experience the feminine by having that, whether or not it's absolutely accurate. So tell me,
well,
where
who knows what's accurate? How do you prove what's accurate?
Exactly, especially if it's all subjective and we're all sitting on the same couch with a different reality. So I wondered what your, how do you see, like your book, The Evolution of God, I'm sort of thinking about the collective, and I'm going, how do you see humanity moving as a species right now?
I think it's a very exciting time, because many of the cultural, societal, religious imprints that we have carried for thousands of years are no longer functioning well for us. That's why we feel so alone. And that's because the mandate on the planet at this time is to use our collective consciousness to come together, to know that there are other people who feel the way you do and have had the kind of experiences. I have worked with presidents and princes and talked about these kinds of things. And they say, well, I had that experience as a child. Yes, I know about that.
Wow.
That's what makes them visible and great, because they are more expanded in their sense of self. You know, so
do you think
we have to start coming together and realizing that we don't have to hide anything. We have to look at each other and see the truth and encourage our intuition and our sense of knowing. And as we do that, we will get rid of, for example, the way we deal with money. It's not a good way.
Not at
all.
It's
not useful.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't evolve. So that book, The Evolution of God, was really about pointing out how we use God as a pretext. How it's your God against my God, and how that started from primordial times when we first came up with the word God or the concept of God. And then what we've done with it, and what we could do with it in the future.
Mm. What do you see us doing with
it?
By internalizing God?
Yes.
And
by realizing that the divine source, through your experience, evolves. And so, and let me say that in a very simple way. We know for sure that parents are changed by their children.
Mm-hmm.
Every parent will agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't win with your children. You have to surrender. And you grow. And as they grow up to be adults, they teach you in ways, intellectually and emotionally, in ways you never thought of. The same is true with the divine, unmanifest source, cosmic source. And so as we become aware of that we are carrying that energy, we can use that again, whether we're making love or we're making money or whatever we're doing. That's a divine, good energy inside us. How should we use it in new ways? Our problem with money is we haven't learned how to wield it yet. It's just an energy.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't learned how to share it because we're still on the survival mode. We still think, oh, I have to get all I can for me because I might not have it in the future.
Right. It's instead a real fear base, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a fear base. Rather than realizing that, as I always said to my students, if you want money, give money. That's a cosmic law. I used to send them out to throw money around on the street and then watch what happened.
And what happened?
You could learn. Well, you could define people in classifications. Some people would look at it and almost as if they'd seen something that embarrassed them. They'd look embarrassed and turn their head away and walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would look around to see if anybody would see it, and then they would reach down and take it. You know, and some people would walk by and then walk by again. And you could, by watching them, you could tell what their conversation with money and their sense of, am I safe, am I abundant or not? So it was a great lesson for students to become aware of the fact that we don't understand how to wield this energy. Hmm. So it is cosmic law. And what I've noticed, and I get such feedback about that, I love it, that I'll say to someone, well, pay your bills. People are always resisting pay their bills. I'd say, eat potatoes and pay your bills. Because when you pay, another family is being fed because you're paying that company. So don't think of the big utility companies as bad guys. Think of the little guys in there that are being paid because you are supporting their job.
That's great.
You know, so that's a power. It's power to send money out. And as we do that, and what I love about that, when you do that, usually what happens is that suddenly money will come to you from some direction. And that reminds us of magic. And I would say that it's a great time on the planet because look at the movies.
Mm-hmm.
The movies and the television, they're all about the heroes. I used to teach a class called Heroes many years ago. They're about heroes. They're about people who have special talents. And that's because it's in our collective unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
That we could do these things. Mm-hmm. Let's break the bread. Come on, people are hungry.
Well, people are hungry, do you think we're going to, do you think that we're evolving? Do you think this consciousness that you're speaking of so beautifully is rising all over the world?
Yes.
In many, many,
yes.
many different types
see,
of people.
And this is why I do the work of incarnation. When we get over who's the victim and who's the victimizer. Because my higher self says the victim and the victimizer are one. Mm-hmm. So they have their story together.
Right.
You know, it's their story. But what it is about is how we live our lives. If you see on television that somebody's starving in Africa, there's a reason for that. So you have to say, how's that about me? Am I starving spiritually? Am I starving emotionally? What do I need to do about this?
Mm-hmm.
And as we let go of survival, as we realize that we have many incarnations, there's no need to fuss about survival. We need to use our lives well. I have had 6 near-death experiences, and my higher self has always said to me, use life. Don't sleep through your life. Don't sleep. Use it.
Did every near-death experience give you a greater perspective?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And I've had all kinds. You know, I've gone right down through purgatory to hell to get a perspective there, and I have learned great things, and I've been with many, many, many people at the moment of their death, and it's been death that's been my greatest teacher. And I think that's why I am unafraid. I'm fearless.
Hmm.
You know.
And do you teach helping people?
It's a great time, especially a great time for women.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Instead of a man date, we might be having a woman date.
I love that. Absolutely. Or at least for all of you men that's listening, the feminine inside you, the yin, you know, using that knowing, that unmanifest knowing that's whispering to you, through your creativity, through your true self, what is true for you at a moment.
Through the nurturing that they have that's within them, too. I see that more and more.
Especially in men today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the point of divorce. We humans, we do things fairly clumsily.
Yes, we do.
You know, we get divorced and the man has to actually feed his child. And he has to actually hang out with his kid for a day instead of the 10 minutes before it goes to bed.
Right, and wipe his bottom and all those other things.
And all those other lovely things that have to do with being, you know, the one who nurtures. So I think it's a great time. And I think we're going through incredibly fast points of clearing and evolution. And people are becoming aware of themselves and of the world in a different way. So I think it's a very exciting time.
That is exciting, too. And a quick multidimensionality. Are we becoming a more multidimensional species collectively?
Well, we've always been multidimensional. We're just becoming aware of it.
So we're going to be able to use it and facilitate
right.
it more easily.
Because the point is not to just go, somebody called me and I knew they were going to call me, but aha, I have intuition. Now, let me turn it around like the child who has to heal the parent. Let me turn it around. Who in my life right now needs my attention? And send them color, especially your enemies. And as we become aware of that, we can draw the cosmic energy through us out into the world, through our divine bodies, rather than, you know, being talking heads, but our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We can really have an influence, an incredible momentum to change the world.
All over the world. Well, thank you, Chris. I feel absolutely delighted with our conversation. I'd
love
to ask you.
Well, we were very fast.
Two Geminis, you know.
Yes, I think so. I actually have 6 planets in Gemini in the 12th house.
Oh, you do? Oh, I have 4 in Gemini in the 8th house.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a lot.
Then we are two sisters of soul.
Yeah. So tell people where to get your website.
It's our email is thelight@lightinstitute.com. And all my books are there, and usually you can get them from bookstores as well. But thelight@lightinstitute.com, or simply lightinstitute.com, I guess, is my...
Yes, and you have
website.
So many wonderful YouTubes and wonderful
yes.
interviews and discussions. So I thank you so much, and I sure honor your work, and I might just come down to the Light Institute.
I hope you will. We would have so much fun together.
We would
giggle and have a lot of fun.
Yes.
And, you know, again, what is more exciting and more illuminating than opening the sense of self? So I invite all of your people to trust themselves And thank you for your voice in this world.
And thank you for our time together, Chris, and all your work, wonderful work. Thank you.
I send you my support and great love.
And you too, and great love. Well, that was Chris Griscom of the Light Institute. How inspirational. I hope you learned as much as I have. And it's only the beginning. I sure recommend her books. The Evolution of God I have not read yet, but I'm going to. And, you know, I just have to say, Ecstasy is a New Frequency was one of the most pivotal books I ever read. So thank you for that, Chris, if you're still on.
Thank you.
This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you for tuning in to Paradigm Shifters. If you have any comments, or if you have any suggestions for wonderful paradigm-shifting guests, or if you want a session with me or with Chris, email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. That's veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. Breathe in some light and send it out to one another, to our whole community of listeners. And I send you much love. Good night.